This is an international podcast transmission. Is anyone out there? If you're listening, you've reached the No Fixed Agenda podcast.
Roxana Pavel here.
Oh.
And welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You asked it quite like you're asking her who she is.
Well, I'm sorry. No.
Yeah, we're Roxana.
All right. Let's do it again. Roxana Pavel is here with us.
I think he was asking how to pronounce it.
Yes.
Or making sure that he
making sure it. I pronounced it right.
Yeah. Okay.
Because what?
How would I say it?
Yes.
In Romanian? Roxana Pavel.
See?
Pavel.
But nobody ever
say it right.
Pavel. In my best white guy Midwestern voice. See, this is
why. Anytime you pronounce an ethnic name, it's like Hernandez is easy, right? Because it's very common. But Pavel is not common, right? So it's like I'm always on edge. I'm like questioning, am I doing it the right way?
I'm going to let this one slide.
Wow.
We'll let this slide.
Wow.
Roxana, we let this slide?
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, fair enough.
I mean, he doesn't even have like a Hispanic name, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
It's the most common Hispanic name, that and Gomez.
Omar.
Yeah.
Omar. You sound like you should be a big white boy white boy from Midwest.
Dude.
With Omar.
Dude, that's a Middle Eastern name.
Yes.
That's not Jeff, bro. That's not Steven.
I actually know an Omar from the Midwest, but yes, they're Middle Eastern.
They're Middle Eastern, bro.
Settled in Chicago.
I've been accused of being Italian. I've been accused of being...
Accused.
Yeah. Accused, 100%. Like, especially when I was a lot bigger, dude. They used to think I was Italian. I was like, are you Italian? I'm like, no, I'm Mexican. And then when I lost weight, they thought I was Middle Eastern a lot of times.
Enough about you. It's always about you.
It's not always about me.
We'll make it about me today.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Roxana.
That's what I'm trying to do. Yeah. And you just keep
So you go ahead and ask her the question then.
You want me to ask her?
I want her to ask the question.
We're going to say this because you referenced Hinge, Brian.
Hinge.
Sure.
In jest, we started asking what is your Tinder profile as something to get in people enticed, right? And it's kind of morphed into podcast elevator pitch. What is going to keep people listening to this conversation? Something about you, something about the restaurant, something maybe people don't even know that they're going to take out of this. So what would your elevator podcast pitch be?
Since we are referencing my Hinge profile,
we're not even going to call it a Tinder profile anymore. We're going to call it a Hinge profile.
I just feel like at my age, it was more appropriate to join Hinge than Tinder.
I don't even know what the difference is.
They're all the same, but the perception, at least in my head, is that Tinder is more for hookups and Hinge is like, hey, I'm serious about this. You know, don't just show up at my house kind of situation. But I've been through quite a few iterations, and I think what I would use for this one is there are strong, independent women out there who also have a soft side, but also I'm actually really shy. Mm-hmm. And what I've learned actually from going to the gym for the past 7 months is that I'm at an age where I don't like when I'm not good at something because I got to do, you know, we all do things that we're good at. And I walked into a gym not knowing anything, literally. And I did not like that. And I was very uncomfortable. But it's good to put yourself in uncomfortable situations, and no matter what age. And that's what Hinge is, too. It's very uncomfortable.
Yeah. So we wanted to talk all things all mine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a story behind it. And so what got you into the restaurant business? Because before that, you were in hospitality.
Right. The way I say it is that I've run restaurants my entire life. I started as a hostess, actually my very first job in the United States 23 years ago.
You've been in the States for 23 years.
Yeah.
And what? Yeah, go ahead. I'll let you finish and then I'll ask more questions.
And was on a whale watch boat on the East Coast. So serving food. I was 22. I didn't even know what a quarter is versus a dime, you know, but I learned it all from like, why are they different sizes and why is the smallest? I don't know. It was very confusing, but I loved it. I had just graduated college. My undergrad is in journalism. And I just started working in the hospitality industry. Mm. And I started working as a hostess, made my way all the way up to a manager. Then I just managed restaurants. I moved to DC. I've been part of opening teams. I've worked for Michelin star restaurants. I've done it all. And then eventually I started working for the Hyatt, for their hotel, for the restaurant in the hotel. Then with that, I transferred to California because I knew I wanted to live in California. And 10 years later, I said, I don't want to do this for other people anymore. I think there is this support for mediocrity in corporate world just because those who fall into the corporate lines, and I understand it's easier to manage,
yeah,
are just more are mediocre. And people who want to, you know, I was always looked at by my colleagues as an overachiever and I wanted to do more. And I literally remember working to fix and to optimize that restaurant reservation system in order to get more reservations. And I was talking to the sous chef at the time about this and he said, who asked you to do this? Then nobody asked me to do this.
It was at this moment she realized she was an entrepreneur.
And I was like, what do you mean? We all want, he's like, don't get us more customers basically, you know, because it's going to be harder to manage.
Yeah.
And 3 months later, everybody's like, why are we so busy? And to this day, I had never told anybody that I messed with the reservation system to optimize it and get more people.
Which group is this with?
This was with Hyatt in DC.
Oh, okay, well,
and I just by observing the flow of our brunch, I realized that it was made for dinner, meaning people stay longer. But then the reservation time slot was for 2 hours, but we only needed an hour and 15 minutes for brunch. And I realized there's a lull, like we see, then we're empty, then we see, then we're empty. It's like, this is wrong. So I went and I messed with it. And then I packed it up and everybody's like, what happened? So I've done things like that everywhere I ever work without anybody asking me. And all of a sudden I was like, I can make money.
Yeah. That's kind of interesting. You say that, like the fact that it was Hyatt, right? A major player in the hotel game. It was their registration, reservation systems off, because it's all about butts and seats and getting people in and out, right? So the fact that Hyatt was still so slow with that, and it's awesome that you came through. It just kind of surprises me that somebody like Hyatt didn't have a better system.
Because in hotels, they have really good trainings and SOPs for the room side so that they get the most heads in beds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when it comes to butts in seats, every restaurant is different in every hotel. And we don't really have, and especially at the time now with AI, all the reservation software is much more flexible and actually learns and it's better. But this is 10, 12, 13 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
So everything was manual. Like we needed to program it.
Okay.
So I think that's why, because throughout the restaurant, there's not a lot of training.
Got it. Did you come to the U.S. for college or did that you finish college and then moved to the U.S.?
Yeah. Oh, you start. Where are you from originally?
I was from Romania. I am from Romania.
You are from Romania. You are from Romania.
I have pledged allegiance to the United States flag, but I was born in Romania. I saw a white van outside. That was up for me, was it?
We were waiting here for you.
Yeah.
I don't have a real ID, but I do have my passport. And then I went to school in Bulgaria and I went to an American college. So it was
in Bulgaria.
Yeah. Oh, it was established by the University of Maine in the early 90s. So right after the fall of communism, they came with money from George Soros, built a whole university that exists to this day. And the idea was to create the future leaders of the Balkans. But we all left, so.
You're like, thanks for the education, I'm out.
One of my colleagues was actually, I think, at some point, the mayor of the capital of Kosovo. So, like, people did stay back and help with that, but a lot of us are in the States now because once we were exposed to the culture, the system of education. We're like, we can't go back to that. Yeah. So right. Here we are.
Man. Wow. That's cool.
So you came over, you were 20 something years old. Did you spoke English, obviously, but you had all that learning curve happened in college.
My first job was at a local TV station so I can pay for my English classes so I can take my SATs.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dude, what was your childhood like, Roxanne? I never asked you that question.
I think very normal. I don't know. I grew up, I have an older brother and great mom and dad. Oh. I don't know. We had anything that we could have at a time. I was 9 when communism fell. So after that, it was definitely more access to consumerism.
Yeah.
But I had a very normal childhood. We traveled.
What was it like watching? Do you remember any of that stuff when communism fell?
Yeah. Yeah.
What was that like?
Crazy. It was crazy because we talk a lot about in this political climate about things that we're allowed and not allowed to. And there are a lot of things that we're not allowed to. We needed an exit visa. So for my parents I had never left the country before the fall of communism. They wouldn't leave they wouldn't let both of my parents leave. So my mom would go and only once every 2 years she could get an exit visa. And we were not allowed to own foreign currency and we were not allowed to take our own money outside of the country. So she would take products to Hungary, the Czech Republic and East Germany and sell them and buy clothes for us.
Wow.
And shoes. And we were the cool cousins because we always had cool shoes that had Velcro.
Right.
And we had jeans.
Wow.
My dad had Levi's. We were cool.
That's rich.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, and that's the thing, in Romania, we were not poor. You just didn't have access. They didn't exist. You couldn't buy them. So it's very similar to, when we're very, very cut off from the rest of the world, there is something that's called Radio Free Europe. And they broadcast out of Germany in each language of the Eastern European countries. And that's how we would get news from the outside world. But it was illegal. To listen to it. So, my dad and his sister would listen to the Beatles on it. And,
in a communist country.
The stories were that, because I think they were recording it on the, what it's called. And I think my dad sent a letter. They're teenagers. And so this is mid-60s. And the Secret Service showed up at the door saying, hey, you can't, because they intercepted the letter. Oh. It was like that. So this is how we would get. So that's how we knew, to come back to your question. That's how we learned, got all the information about what was happening in the country during the revolution, because they wouldn't broadcast it on TV. So we would just listen to Radio Free Europe.
Illegal radio.
Yeah. Which was, it was legal, right? So it sounds a lot like NPR or like whatever. Right, right. And it's just broadcasted for us, but you weren't allowed to listen to it.
So wow.
It was pretty wild. And I remember working at the Hyatt in D.C. I actually met somebody from Radio Free Europe, and I was so touched. I was like, you don't know what it meant for us to have that.
Yeah. Right.
But it was crazy because there was shooting outside, but we didn't know who was shooting at who.
Yeah.
It was the military, and then there were terrorists. We still, to this day, don't really know who, because the military turn against the dictator, but somebody was still fighting them. And when they caught some of them, they were all dressed in black and masked. They were Middle Eastern, some of them, because our dictator had a really good relationship with Saddam Hussein. So they were thinking that he had sent some special forces to help him get out. And he almost, when they caught him, he was on the way to a helicopter to fly out. Shot him on Christmas on live TV, which apparently the rest of the world saw. We didn't know.
Didn't know that.
No, we didn't see it. Later, I learned that, there's videos of it online. And
wow.
We never
imagine
saw
living
that.
Through something like that, dude.
No, man.
That's wild, that's dude. Creepy. Right? If you think about it.
That's the stuff where Americans take it for granted. Yeah. Honestly, it's an interesting deal on how that all works out and plays out.
Yeah, we were talking about just the Kenyans and their culture and upbringing as well, right? And so
yeah,
it's kind of wild. We are truly privileged people.
But I mean, there's so many things that are so real and they're so recent. Like, I know we don't want to get into politics, but my mom had, between having my brother and me, she had 2 miscarriages. And she would tell the story how she went to the hospital to her doctor and with the miscarriage. And she's like, "You're pregnant." And I was like, "I'm trying to get pregnant." They thought that she was trying to do something at home to cause the miscarriage because it was illegal to have an abortion. And she said before he even did anything to, like, she was in pain, she was all this, he picked up the phone and called the Secret Service to register, to record the fact that she's having a miscarriage.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's how
wild, dude.
Yeah.
But that's why I asked those questions, because you come out of an environment like that, that you, most people are exposed, in my experience, people that I have met that have been exposed to hardships or difficulties or just a revolution or a rough upbringing, have a tendency to have a different view on what they can and cannot do. And so that's one of the things that I've noticed that about you, that you know, going to your restaurant, watching you work out in the gym, watching the effort of, like, even though you did not know anything walking into the gym, there was still no quit in you, right?
Right.
There was moments of doubt for sure, but there was no quit. And so that's kind of the thing in my head that's why I asked that preliminary question of you, like, what was your upbringing? Because I'm right from that perspective.
For sure. Like, I don't understand people who say I can't do it. Like, I probably can, you know, my dryer broke and I went on YouTube and I'm like, it's a fan. I mean, it's a glorified fan. Let's do this. And yeah, it was just a belt. I had no idea, you know, what it is, but I looked it up.
Pays a belt.
That's the beauty of YouTube now.
Yeah.
Social media worked for good.
So. Yes. Yeah. I fixed it 3 times.
So you come over to the state, you go to college, you're in Romania, you go to an English college, you come over, you know nothing about our system.
Yeah.
You end up in D.C. How long were you in D.C. for?
First, I was in Cape Cod.
Okay.
So I was in Cape Cod for 10 summers.
Wow.
Okay.
Here we go. He's awake now.
Well, we're going to talk about the white people area. No, funny. Like, you come from Romania and you come over and everything else. We talk about the upbringing there. And then you go to Cape Cod where it's like...
rich people.
The posh. The richest people in the States. Yeah.
I didn't go to Martha's Vineyard.
No,
even the hood in Cape Cod is nice, though.
My point is you come over from Romania to the States to a place like Cape Cod, which is very wealthy.
Yeah.
Very dominated by a certain demographic and everything else. And it's almost like one of those things, like when you come to the States for the first time, that's the experience that you're getting.
That's your first impression.
Does that skew any of your,
but not how you think.
Okay.
So at the very tip of Cape Cod is a town called Provincetown,
mm-hmm.
which is like the gay capital or the gay, most gay place on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And this is pre-legal marriage.
Got it.
It's the most liberal place you'll ever be in. And liberal, not in the political sense necessarily, but in you can be whoever you are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. And honestly, that was the best place for an immigrant to land, because I didn't stand out for having an accent, for being from Romania.
Okay.
And then the reason we end up there is because I came as a seasonal worker initially, and we end up in tourist places because that's where there's a need for a labor. But it was amazing. It really was. I thought that in my mind, coming from Europe, I thought that's what America is like. Wow. Right? Shockingly, it's not.
Yeah, it goes to a military town.
Well, that's why I say that. You get so, like, mentally you're so skewed because you're coming to a tourist area that it's very well kept up. It's like the demographic got a lot of money. And then to come to certain points, even going to DC from Cape Cod, it's a huge difference.
That's a culture shock in itself.
For sure. And apparently, especially so this is early 2000, it was still there. Now, like, there's areas where we go now in DC with my friends and, like, we couldn't drive through here. You know, there are places where you don't get off the bus at the right stop in DC. You end up in the hood, and it's not okay. Like, it's not safe when you look like this.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely shocking. It was a lot of adjusting on my part and softening. And I still try to keep that Eastern side, Eastern European side away. And but yeah, it was very interesting. It was really hard to be in my 20s as a straight girl in a gay town, but, you know, just walking down the street and nobody's looking at you. But that was the only downfall. It's a beautiful artist town. And I just fell in love with it. So I was there for 10 years. The first winter I went back to Romania. Then I went to grad school in upstate New York the winter. And then the last few winters I went to Florida.
Okay.
And did nothing. I mean, it was me and my mom. I say that I spend my retire years early.
You're down in Florida.
Yeah. Now you're working night and day, but yeah.
I was working 6 days a week in the summer managing a restaurant. And then in the winter, I would just go to Florida, relax.
What a life.
Yeah.
It's too early to go to God's waiting room.
God's waiting room? Is that what Florida's called?
I was always the youngest person at the pool.
Of course you were.
Without a doubt.
I'm sure those older men loved it.
I didn't. Yeah. Oops,
for God's sure. waiting room. I've never heard Florida. But not, dude, you know Robin Hall, right?
Yes.
Yeah, little Robin. So her dad's in Florida and she tells me, he says the same thing. It's the most beautiful place on earth. There's so many old people, though. And then you made the reference of God's waiting room, I'm like,
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry for anybody who's listening.
But you go
Florida,
there to
right?
die. I am, for as nice as Florida is, you go there. It is God's waiting room.
Jeez. Okay. I never referenced it that way, but
that's
now,
all you do. You go and you sit on the beach and you wait.
Is that you just wait?
I agree.
Anywho, I want to get into all mine because I think Oceanside is probably one of the best locations now in San Diego County for restaurants. Like
it
the
is popping
the
off.
Do you open or close? Two things can be true.
Yes, 100%.
But the variety of restaurants that have come into Oceanside and the quality that's come into Oceanside as of late, you look at it as like, I live in Carlsbad, and Carlsbad's a great location for walkabout traffic, right? Like one spot to the next, you can walk a couple blocks, you're good to go. The problem is Carlsbad has a lot of the same stuff, a lot of Mexican, a lot of Italian food places, and a lot of coffee shops.
Yep.
Which Oceanside has as well, but there's so much more variety, and the quality I think is so good in Oceanside with all of the newer restaurants that have come in that I think it's probably one of the better locations in San Diego County to open up a restaurant now. So how did all of this kind of you mentioned that you wanted to do your own thing.
Yeah.
How did, cause I know that there's a little bit of history behind where All Mine is at too, right? Art studio or a...
No, it was a pizza place. But so I decided I want to do my own thing. And then a few days later if you're going to do this, let's do this. So I started Googling businesses for sales in Oceanside. I was so determined. I was like, I'll do anything. I'll buy a laundromat. I just need to do my own thing.
Okay.
And the more I was looking, I was like, no, I still... Restaurant is what I know, is what I like, is what I feel. And I Googled restaurants for sale in Oceanside. And I found this one place that said it's walking distance to the beach. It had some pictures. I had no idea. It didn't have a name. Did some investigation. I found it. It was a rundown pizza place, New York style deli, that at some point, it was called Carmine's. At some point.
That's right. That's right. It was.
Yes,
yeah.
It was. Yes.
At some point in the early 2000s, was probably great. The lady who owns the building, her husband who has passed away since he started it, he was from New York. She was like, yeah, we used to make our own things and make all of the dressings and this and that. It wasn't that anymore. Anyway, I went in, I had a pizza, I looked around, I said, I can do this. The manageable size, I love the brick, and I already had, like, I know how to decorate. And I put an offer I mean, I called the realtor. I came in, met with the guy. It was during COVID. I know. I remember I was at home because I had been exposed. So I had to be at home for a few days. All the restaurants in my hotel were closed because everybody had COVID. So we didn't literally have staff. So this is at the end of COVID. We're right at the height of Delta. And I knew this is the end. Now it's spiked. Everybody's going to get immune one way or the other. People are going to want to come back out. They want to sit at the bar. They're going to want service. They want don't want to scan another QR code ever again or eat out of a box. So this is a right moment. Everybody said, you're crazy. I'm like, well, you buy stock when the market's down. You buy the worst house on the street. You buy a restaurant in COVID.
Yeah.
I bought one of my biggest races during COVID and I bought it for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah.
And it was one of the best things I did during that whole entire stretch. So I'm right there with you.
There's so many stories out there, dude, that have like people, new businesses starting during COVID because of that. You go in when it's low, right?
Yeah, it was. So anyway.
And that was that. I went in and talked to the owner. I lowballed an offer. He was like, oh, and then he texted me 2 hours later saying, okay. And then told my brother and I said, I think I just bought a restaurant. I think this is what just happened. Yeah. And then there's a escrow process, just like you buy a house.
Yeah.
And we were in escrow for like 3 months because they had to make sure that he paid all his bills and taxes and whatnot. And during this time, I just started planning. Everybody said, oh, were you thinking about this your whole life? No.
Yeah.
And the truth is, we grow and evolve every day. I opened with as much money as I could to redecorate. You know, we built the bar, but I didn't want to do anything too much. I didn't want to have to get permits and have it be so time consuming. And we opened with 6 pizzas and 2 salads on our menu and a few wines. I knew one person in Oceanside when I opened this, and it was my own realtor from when I bought the house. I knew nobody else. And that was crazy. Like thinking back to it, I was like, okay, maybe you shouldn't have done that. But I did and it worked out. I hired a chef I was looking for someone. I was looking for a baker. After working in restaurants for a long time, you know that your chef is good at what they do, but they're not always great at dessert. They're not always great at baking. I looked for a pastry chef or a dessert or a baker because that's what's most important. Pizza is the dough. So I found this guy. He was with me for a few months, but he developed the dough and, you know, we've been perfecting it every day since, but he was like a geek and nerd. And we went and had like 20 different batches and each had a little bit of salt and a little bit less water. And we started baking. I'm like, nope, not this. This needs that. And it was great. And in a few days, he and I developed our dough. And I was like, well, this is it. Let's go. We got it.
Their pizza's fired.
Oh, it's amazing. I love your spot.
Thank you. I hope so. Otherwise, I hope you wouldn't have invited me. Or at least, you know, lie.
Yeah,
I'm a little disappointed. Yeah. I don't have a pizza with me right now.
Yeah, exactly. No, I don't want the pizza. I want the lasagna. That's what I want to ask.
But everything, like I said, it was in the beginning, I said that we'll never have pasta because it's just an oven. We don't actually have a fully functioning, we'd have a fully functioning kitchen, but we don't have a traditional kitchen. We have an oven and we have a hood, but that was all the equipment and refrigeration. So now we run on induction burners. That's how we make all of our pastas. Huh. We have like this tiny, tiny little fryer, enough to fit under the hood. And we have pasta, we have warmers for our sauce, but yeah, we had to make do. We had to reinvent and run this non-traditional restaurant. And I love it. You know, we don't have a back area for the staff. We don't have a bar and the service area. It's all, so I had to, which is part of why I like this place, or because I can do it just the way I want it. And I run it the way I want it. And I hire front of the house staff with little or no experience. And those are the easiest to mold because they've never worked it in any other way.
Have you found, I'm kind of interested now.
Yes.
Like I love, because the workforce is so hard nowadays, do you find it easier to find better help or more resumes that come through or anything like that? Because you're not looking for the full experience individual, and it's harder and harder to find somebody who actually has like a really good resume in anything that you're looking for. So I'm quite curious on how your perspective is on that.
It was very hard in the beginning because there were still paychecks or checks coming in from the government, because everybody who worked in this industry went and worked for Uber Uber Eats and do all this kind of whatever they're called industry, until they found out they actually have to pay taxes for this. So that's when it changed. It's been very difficult in the kitchen. I think for the very first time, we're at the point where I'm very happy with everybody in the kitchen and we have a strong team. The front of the house, although I've had turnover there too, but mostly people moving out of town or out or whatever, nobody actually quit. But it was definitely easier in front of the house. But one of my strategies is if I see someone come through or if I see a resume come through, even if I'm not hiring and I don't think I need someone at that time, if it's the right person, I'll hire them. I hire athletes. My manager, who now moved back home to Tahoe, but he was my manager for 2 years. He was a professional skier. He was part of the U.S. the national team. Mm. This was his first job after retiring from professional skiing. Wow. And had zero restaurant experience.
Wow.
And I trained him and I called him mini-me's, you know, and I got him to be amazing. And every time I would tell, I was like, yeah, Edison has never worked in a restaurant before. They're like, what? Like, well, he worked for 2 months in Newport shucking oysters, but that doesn't count.
Yeah.
But athletes to me, if I see professional sports on your resume, I'll hire you immediately because there's work ethic, there's goal, you know, working for the common goal. There's, you know, you show up on time. Somebody has yelled at you worse than I will ever yell at you. And you kept showing up.
Yeah. Most likely you're teamwork.
Correct.
Right. You're part of a team. Unless you're in an individual sport, you know what that teamwork
even then
needs
you're
to be.
Part of a team because exactly. You know, Edison was a skier, so he was in a team, but you're still in a national team. Yeah. You're still on a team at some point.
You still have a common goal.
Yep. You still have a common goal.
That's cool. I love hearing people's perspective on like how they hire and what they look for. Cause I hear the athletes a lot when I ask other business owners, like, cause that is the common thing.
That makes me very happy because Edison walked the whole of Oceanside with his resume and nobody even called him back.
He didn't have experience.
He didn't have experience. And I said, I don't want to unteach you bad habits. I want to teach. It's easy to teach you how to wait tables if you have the right attitude or how to make. So to me, I hire good people that I see that are nice. They're smart. They have ethics. They're raised right. Like something, you know, I have one of my main guys, a server assistant, he was 17 and he walked in with a speech impediment, blonde hair and nail polish and pierced ear. And he said, it was a long, because he was very nervous and he's a fantastic human. And he said, my mom thought that, you know, maybe you're not going to hire me because of my earrings. And I just put my hand out and I said, we have the same nail color polish. I think this was meant to be.
But I love that. I love that story because it's very similar to when I was in corporate America, when I was hiring people and you hire the person. Mm-hmm. I used to do simple things. And I like to tell the stories like I would have somebody show up in the lobby of wherever I was working and hiring from, right? And they'd be like, do you want them? Some of them were recruits. So they'd bring the recruits to the office or wherever I was doing the interviews. And I said, no, leave them in the lobby. I'll go get them. There was one reason and one purpose for that one trick. And it was only because I wanted to go get them in the lobby and walk as fast as I possibly could from the lobby to whatever my office or whatever room that we were and to see if they would keep up.
It's so mean.
Yeah. And it's like, and so if I look back and they're like 10 steps behind me, they didn't make it past question two. It was like a 5-minute
But that's
interview.
What matters. Here, right. Right.
Well, especially when in the environment well, that whatever. I was in. Right. Right. Yeah.
One
yeah.
matter. Yeah.
Yeah. So sense of urgency immediately. Correct. Right. If yeah. you didn't have a sense of urgency, like, why is this guy moving so fast? Yeah, right. You know, like, oh, you're not going to make it. Dude. You're not going to make it. I tried going against that one stupid rule that I had every single time. And it always backfired on me every time I've gone against it. And so that's to hear you hiring to the person explains why the environment at All Mine is what it is today. So kudos to you. That's awesome.
Thank you. And yeah. with the kitchen, we always do a stage. So we do a trial. And even in the front of the house, we do a trial, which you come in for a shift or, you know. 2 hours. If you get them home after 2 hours, then it's not a good time. And somebody was telling me that the main chef, whatever he was, at a very new pizza restaurant that opened in Oceanside. He's like, it's this guy, Mike, he worked here for one day. And I was like, I have no recollection of this person. And then I was like, probably came in for a stage, never made it. We finally realized, yeah, it was somebody who couldn't even, chef was giving him like small tasks. Wouldn't do it. And then he has to go to the bathroom and stuff like that. So he's like, I'm sending him home. And we look at the chef's like, really? They hired him? What? As the main guy? Yeah. And then another day's like, I can't believe they hired him. What were they thinking?
Yeah.
But that really works out for us to do a trial shift. Then we really get to see behind.
Interesting. So that's All Mine, but you also help teach, right?
Yes. Yes. And in All Mine, I do it all. So as far as teaching, I coach at the business school in San Marcos, Cal State San Marcos.
Yeah.
It's basically a class where we teach them how to be out in the world, how to interview, how to build their LinkedIn profile, how to network, how to write their resume. And then each class has a teacher and three coaches.
What sparked you to do that? I mean, in the hospitality field for all these years, right? Have your own restaurant. Not like you need something else to do.
Right, right. And most of the other coaches are like retired or, yeah. you know, or in between jobs.
Here you are at the peak of your busyness and you said, oh, I want to go coach somebody.
I just wanted, well, it's part of networking in one thing, but I wanted to be exposed to that. I thought maybe when I retire, I want to teach. I don't know. It just, there was this opportunity. One of my customers was doing it and she is retired. I said, I want to do that. She asked me 3 times, are you serious? You know, and I'm like, hey, Lisa, do you really have time? I was like, yes. So finally, you know, I just was exposed to a new world. All of a sudden I'm at a university, a big university, right? In California, and I'm in a classroom and I'm part of this business program after, you know, coming to the States with a suitcase and $500 and working on a whale watch boat. I felt like pretty cool.
Full circle. Yeah.
Pretty cool.
To be able to do that. Yeah, absolutely. Like the definition of giving back. And that was one of the things intriguing me because you and I have met and you kind of helped me out in trying to just get me to see the real reason behind OTH and all that stuff. And so,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, some of the questions you asked, I kind of had an idea, but putting it pen to paper was huge.
Yeah. And that's why I do that.
Yeah.
And I've only done that pro bono. So I've done it with a lot of friends. And that's another thing that I want to maybe in the future do some consulting or some sort of marketing. And I'm sure variations of those questions exist, but I didn't learn them anywhere. It's really from my practice and it really helps. Even if we don't do anything else right after that, but just having that conversation and having those questions asked.
Yeah.
But I missed the boat on this. How did you guys get connected? Yeah. What's the connection?
Through Corinne. Affirmations and Wellness.
Okay.
Yeah. I went for a trial at a different gym and I did not enjoy it at all, but I knew that I had to go to the gym and I was talking to Corinne about it and it was terrible. Like it was so stressful to me, but I said, whatever. Like I literally showed up almost in my PJs one day because I was like, I just need to go. And she said, why don't you go here? And I was like, oh, I don't know. She's like, yeah, I'll come with you. And I remember I signed up for the five free.
Five days.
And I never, we never went.
Yeah.
we were supposed to go and we both like woke up. I was like, we can't go. And I never went. And then I said, okay, let's do this. And I signed up and I know you texted her and said, she signed up for the 2 months, like before I even went, like, because I knew that I had to make myself do it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how I did it. And I showed up on a Tuesday, luckily not on a Wednesday.
Yeah. So Wednesdays are so much fun though. Yeah. Like, she showed up on a Tuesday and I'm going to give you some accolades. She was, like I said, you could totally tell you were intimidated. And that's kind of how we met through Corinne. She's absolutely right. She walked into the gym and she was just like, I don't know what to do here. Right. And then you were Vera first, right?
Yes.
It was Coach Vera. And so Vera came back and said, I met Roxanne. And I was like, oh yeah, great. What'd you think? She goes, she's a perfect fit. We're going to get her to do things right. And I was like, a lot of room for opportunity there. And I said, good. And so being who you are, this is why I wanted to interview you, because you walked into this environment that was very uncomfortable. And then you didn't even blink twice. You signed up for like a 2 month commitment. Right. And then not only did you just sign up, you showed up, even though you were in pain, you were even having struggles with just like squatting because your knees and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And now here you are, a full blown athlete squatting with the barbell on your back.
145 this morning.
Just saying, not being able to squat at all, dude. Right. So that was like the biggest, huge, man.
And I've only started actually squatting with
about a month and a half ago. Right.
Yeah.
And
so,
So it was a lot of slow going, but again, kudos to who you are as a person. And that's kind of the work ethic that you see. Right. And so I wanted to hear your story. I wanted to know exactly what your childhood was like, because it tells a whole story. You know, so many times we look at entrepreneurs or people that have businesses and they're like, oh, well, they had it that way. Right. Or whatever the case may be. But 99% of the time, it's not that way at all. It's like there was a lot of suffering. There was a lot of pain. There was a lot of overcoming. And I wanted to hear that story from your behalf.
Thank you.
So
one of my favorite stories is my contractor. So I have some panels that I was putting on one of the walls for soundproofing.
Mm-hmm. And we circle back to soundproofing.
See, for the listener, you thought that was just going to be a little side piece. Now we're coming back to it now.
The root of this whole conversation is soundproofing. Thanks, Roxanna.
And I bought them with, I didn't look, and they didn't come with like a self-adhesive. He had to figure out what adhesive to put on them. And he texted me and Dan's like, I don't know, man. I came in today and like 17 of them were on the floor. I was like, me trying to make all the decisions, like, I'm sure you'll figure it out. That's all I said. You know what? He figured it out. All the panels are still on the wall. But he, like, months later, when we're friends to this day, and he was like, I was like, okay. He didn't know what to do with my answers. Because I don't know if he thought I'd say, okay, let's switch to something else, or like I would give him a solution. And I'm like, no, you got this. And he said, I guess, sure, I will just figure it out. Thanks. About my style of like, I trust you and I hire you and you got this. That's I'll figure it out.
So how can people get in contact with AU as a coach, if that's something you're even offering? And then where can people find your restaurant and all that stuff?
My restaurant is on Coast Highway, right next to the Regal Cinema. If anybody knows where that is, it's going down.
At least for right now.
It's going down soon.
At least for now.
And we're 109 South Coast Highway. We're online at allmind.oceanside on Instagram and allmindoceanside.com. We're open every day for dinner. We open at noon on Saturday and Sunday. We do catering. Mm. We can come to your house. We're doing in various events. We're actually going to be at New Village Arts in Carlsbad for their premiere this Saturday. So we're going to provide some snacks. And you can rent out the restaurant as well.
Oh.
You want to celebrate your birthday or anniversary or staff outing.
Ooh.
OTH party.
Is it big enough to hold everybody there?
We'll make room. I also am, yes, I'm very passionate about marketing. I helped you and Corinne, and I think that's my superpower when it comes to how I grew this from knowing nobody to next week I'm being recognized by the mayor.
That's awesome.
With an award for helping the community. And I got an award earlier this year from Visit Oceanside for being an industry partner of the year was the award for. So I went from that to I sit on the board for Visit Oceanside. I work with the chamber a lot. And I literally get recognized at Trader Joe's, which is weird. I can't go from the gym. I have to go home and change before I go anywhere else.
You can't show up at Trader Joe's after conditioning class. Not cool.
Well, last conditioning class I went to, I had a mini stroke in your office. So it'd be a while.
You're not solid it right now. That's not the case. She's fine.
It was not a mini stroke. I was still helping because I was telling my friends there to leave you a Google review. Yeah. And I was like, I can only see through one eye, but I can help you right here. 5 stars.
I'm happy to say that OTH has all 5 stars, okay?
Yeah. One-eyed, but yeah. We did it.
It's all good. Delusional, but...
But yeah, that's where I am. And I'm very thankful for your friendship and for everybody who I met along the way. Yeah. And my knees don't hurt anymore. That's pretty fucking awesome. Amazing.
That's cool. I love that. Well, thank you, Roxanne.
Yeah, thank you for coming in. Appreciate it.
I love hearing all the stories.
Best pizza in Oceanside.
Hands down.
Hands down. Go try the lasagna, too.
The lasagna is fire.
According to AAA, we're one of the best 10 pizza places in Southern California.
Yeah, I would agree with that wholeheartedly.
Anybody that can get me to eat a potato pizza, which does not... Listen to me carefully, listeners. If you haven't tried the potato pizza, you got to try it.
Delicious.
It is so good.
And they do that in Italy. So pizza started as a food that people would just put whatever they had in the fridge, on top. So you're poor, you had potatoes.
Potatoes, yeah.
If you weren't as poor, you added prosciutto, So that's what it is. Yeah. Dude.
It's a poor man pizza, but it tastes so good. That's why I like it. Yeah. But anyways.
Thank you so much,
Roxanne.
Appreciate it.
Awesome. Oh. Keep it coming. Another round. Oh, keep it coming. Another round. You got me so far down. So far down.
This has been an international podcast transmission of No Fixed Agenda presented by Bubs Naturals. Music was provided by The Poor Dirty Astronauts with lyrics written by Matt Meyer. You can rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you find your favorite podcast episodes. NFA, over and out.